And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. With me is Phil Conlon.
Yes, good evening, Phil.
Good evening. You've been to Chicago.
I've been to Chicago.
The Windy City.
It's cold.
All right.
It's a cold town.
Yeah, well, you came, well, thank you. And now you're back where it's warm and toasty
right.
in
course.
Toronto for about 30 minutes. Today we're going to be talking to Ramsey Clark, former Attorney General of the United States, about his very recent visit. He's back only about 6 days, I think, maybe shorter than that, from a trip to Damascus to establish what is going on there, and he also went about and saw some sites, and he, of course, is in a position to evaluate it because he had been there 2 years ago as well. We'll go into all that later. We're going to also today be featuring an interview which we did Friday morning at CIUT with Dr. John Carlos, who was the American Olympian who in 1968, together with Tommy Smith, when they got on the medals stand at the Olympics, Tommy Smith had been first in the 200 meters, medal winner, and John Carlos had finished third, had the bronze medal. But then they did something that stunned the world. They held up their fists with their black gloves on them to indicate that America at that time was experiencing terrific struggle, or an epic struggle against racism, led by Dr. Martin Luther King, who had been martyred only that year. And so ever since that moment, there is the issue of race and sports, and the necessity and importance of people speaking out and acting has been, it's always been a reference point. He is, John Carlos is going to be at Innes College Town Hall this evening, Monday, March the 7th, am I right? At 6:30 is my understanding, but it might be 6. There seems to be some questions, so if you're listening to the Taylor Report, go as soon as you finish listening to the Taylor Report. And they're going to be showing a film called Salute, which acknowledges a third man who was on the podium that day, and his name was Peter Norman, an Australian runner who finished second, had the silver medal. And to the amazement of everyone, he stood in solidarity with Tommy Smith and John Carlos, who were both immediately banned from the games by the American Olympic leadership under the man named Avery Brundage, who will live in infamy from that date forward. But who knew that this young man from Australia would be wearing a pin indicating solidarity with the struggle for human rights, and he was never allowed again to represent Australia at the Olympics, though he was the greatest sprinter in Australian history. And and John Carlos and Tommy Smith always stood beside him, always acknowledged his heroism, and he, like John Carlos and Tommy Smith, experienced a great deal of difficulty in their lives and had to put up with a lot of grief. Now, of course, they've emerged as somewhat immortal, I think, in sports history and political history. Unfortunately, Peter Norman died a few years ago, but this film, Salute, Innes College, 6 o'clock, 6:30, I'm going to put it that way. The film will probably be shown, I think, after 7. John Carlos is going to be speaking before the film, and we urge you to attend. But let's go now to our interview on Friday with John Carlos. Joined now by Dr. John Carlos. Are you there, sir?
Yes, Phil, I'm here.
How you doing?
Man, I caught a cold when I was in Virginia, man, and it's picking up pace, bro. It's taking over me right now.
Yeah, what we hope you get well. Everybody's looking forward to seeing you. You're going to be in Toronto on March the 2nd, 6:30, speaking at Innes Town Hall. By the way, you played football in Canada, didn't you?
Montreal Alouettes, and I think last I was with the Toronto Argonauts before I left town.
I assume you remember there as everywhere. Wherever you go, they say, this is John Carlos, and together he's a man who, together with Tommy Smith, And a lesser-known figure, Peter Norman, startled the world in 1968. Did you realize that you were standing on a volcano culturally, that you had started something that they're still going to talk about today?
Well, I didn't know it would last this far, but I knew we was on to something that was never seen or experienced before. And it would get everyone's attention, and that's pretty much what our goal was, to give society a shock treatment, let them know that we have some issues that we can no longer put under the rug, under the carpet. We have to face them head on. And we're still trying to bring this about where we can face these social issues, man, and try and get them resolved as best we can and put behind us.
Mm-hmm. I hope people also know that you're a member of the Track Hall of Fame. You're recognized as you were one of the fastest men ever. You had to risk an athletic career, and I suppose at the time you couldn't have anticipated how angry or brutal the white power structure of America was going to be towards yourself and Mr. Smith.
Well, I'm pretty sure that, we realized that we could have sacrificed our lives for what we believe in, and it's important to put ourselves in that position then, and it's just as important today, to make change. You know, when you come into this world, man, you face certain circumstances and situations in your life. I don't think you think as much about yourself as you think about your kids and their kids, in terms of trying to make things better for you, for them, than it was for you.
Yeah. You've used the expression that you became a beacon. And what's your thoughts about when you see Ferguson this past summer, the events there, and the members of the St. Louis Rams who risked a lot of trouble? They put their careers on the line, and they came out and symbolized this gesture of hands up, don't shoot. And then later, only a month or two later, members of the NBA also went on the court and showed themselves in solidarity with that slogan, "I can't breathe." That must have warmed your heart, didn't it? I mean, thinking back to 1968 and the connection between these gestures, outstanding athletes putting their careers on the line?
Well, actually what it did, it made me reflect on a statement that I made back in 1968, that if they thought that John Carlos was a bad person for his standing up for his beliefs, wait for the next generation. And I believe the next generation is here to let them know that, you know, enough is enough, and it's time that we come to grips with this racial situation that we have in the United States and throughout the world. It's time that we start to try and deal with this, and they're coming out in volume now. One of the greatest assets that we have right now to reflect these issues is the media that we have, social media, which is a very powerful tool. You know, they have that link now where they can put their minds and their efforts together and spread it not just throughout the United States but throughout the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, and on Monday you're going to be here talking about this. Almost immediately there was sort of unknown effects. My understanding is you did not know the man Peter Norman very well, or if at all, just prior to his decision to put on that identification as being in the for Olympians for Human Rights. So from the very moment you're on the stand, you find yourself with a new supporter. What was that? Tell us about Peter Norman and how you reacted to his journey.
Well, I think first of all, Mr. Norman is a hell of an individual, or was a hell of an individual in terms of being a man and being a man of concern for society. I think the first thing that I was attracted to Peter about is the fact that he was a very gifted athlete. He was aware of his talents, and he was aware of his inner strengths. We decided that we were going to do something. You know, didn't anyone on this planet know what Mrs. Smith and I had in mind to do? And I asked Peter, did he believe in human rights? And, of course, he said yes. He mentioned that his mom and dad were Salvation Army workers all his life. And it was a perfect fit. It's like God told all his angels, you sit down and I'll handle this one myself. Because everything would work. Peter Norman was there, which was excellent. I don't think too many individuals, white individuals, would have the inner strength to become involved in something such as Peter was involved in. And then at the same time, this is the first time that the games was televised on a worldwide level. It was the first time it was in Technicolor. So all of the symbols and everything that we had to bring to the games, everything was just ideal. It was perfect, a perfect moment. And, you know, we were all blessed in terms of being able to proceed to the victory stand. And when I say proceed to the victory stand, to go beyond the challenges that we had to make the victory stand.
Yeah, and I want to make sure I ask you this. We had this phenomena that I hadn't realized that the Avery Brundage, who I think, by the way, my congratulations to you by raising your fist, finished off with one punch, Avery Brundage. No one could face, after you had taken this step, Mr. Brundage was badly damaged. I mean, I understand they persecuted people, but nonetheless, you really dealt them a blow. But they did not just try to intimidate you and removed you from the Olympics, but they really tried to do a job on the other athletes. Is it true they sent Jesse Owens to talk and try to change everybody's minds?
Yes, they did. They sent Jesse Owens. And unfortunately, you know, Jesse was a pawn. They used Jesse as a pawn because they had Jesse to believe that we were doing such a terrible thing and it would be a role for him to play to try and get us to turn around, like turn the stampede around. You know, Jesse had the same goal in mind as we had. He just had old-school methods, and we had modern-day methods. We all wanted to have a better society. I mean, Jesse used to say, if you walk with me long enough and talk with me long enough, we'll have our understanding. But Jesse realized down the line that that was just a fallacy. You know, he thought it would be that way. If I be a good guy, they would in turn come back and be a good guy and embrace me. But it didn't come about. And it took years for Jesse to realize that we were on the same team. They just took advantage of Jesse and used him. Because if you think about it, Jesse's one of the greatest athletes of all time.
Yes.
Relative to Olympic sports. And after he got back, I mean, they boxed him up and put him in the cellar somewhere. You know, they never acknowledged Jesse for who he was as a man, as a human being, anything. He was just a trinket. Let's go get him and use him when we want. When Jesse got back from the games, they would use him to go to union halls to speak, bring him in the back door, lead him to the mic, let him say what he had to say, and walk him on back out the back door again, never offer him a cup of coffee or water or anything.
Yes.
Jesse became very much astute as to what the situation was and what type of methodology you had to do to try and make change before he left this world.
Yeah. No, it is a remarkable story. And the yourself and Tommy Smith and Peter Norman have sort of made it into an emblem. We're so fortunate. You're quite aware, as they say, it's an iconic moment. You must feel somewhat like a performance artist wherever you go. Even to this day, it is what you did is still being interpreted, right?
Well, you know, when you sit back and think about it, you know, it wasn't just the moment at that particular time. It was the movement at that time. They tried to focus on the moment, and Say, no, I'll focus on the movement, and the movement was the Olympic Project for Human Rights. Human rights goes across the plains of this earth. Everyone can say, yes, we've had some atrocities that happened to us. We've been oppressed. We've had the power structure to try and hold us back. Many people in this world can relate to what we were trying to express at that particular time.
Yeah,
and that goes across every ethnic group, every religion, you know, all of it, the whole gamma.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. The one last thing about the symbol itself. Immediately, it was called the Black Power Salute. At the moment that this occurred, is that how did you have the concept Black Power in mind, or did that somebody just it was laid on it by journalists?
No, that was the media, right-wing media at that time. Remember, we didn't have diverse media. We only had the right-wing press at that particular time, and they wanted to put a spin on it to try and intimidate the rest of society to make them think that we were bad guys and we wanted to destroy America and destroy the white world, and that was so far from the truth. But we had no way to override that at that particular time because, you know, they never let us tell our story. They told their story.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're fortunate. We're going to hear your story on Monday. You're coming here to Toronto. You're going to be here at 6:30 speaking at Innes Town Hall. I really look forward to it. You're one of the great athletes, and you sure inspire myself and everybody I know. And I appreciate very much your talking to us.
Thank you so much, and I wish everyone would come out and bring your young kids if you have an opportunity as well. Let's try and have a family affair and see if we can exchange and have a better society in the end result.
Thank you. I absolutely agree with you.
And that was John Carlos, and he is going to be at Innes Town Hall tonight at 6. We're going to say 6:30, where some people have said 6. I would urge you to go early because they're going to be showing this film called Salute, about Peter Norman, the third guy on the stand who showed solidarity with John Carlos and Tommy Smith. That's at Innes College, 2 Sussex, at 6:30, a film, and, of course, John Carlos will be speaking.